The board recognizes that there are environmentally sensitive areas on the property. However, the board finds and notes that those environmentally sensitive areas are located in the northern portion of the property, and the proposed affordable housing project will be constructed in the southern half of the property. In any event, the board specifically finds that development of the property for the affordable housing project will not result in appreciable harm to the environment or to public health or safety, and further, that the affordable housing project has been designed with a view toward the protection of natural resources. Now, so the question would be, if this amended site plan approval changes anything, has any other disturbance in environmentally sensitive area.
So we're only looking at the confines of things, changes, like right, the basin that, and stuff like that.
Right, if okay. It doesn't, basically.
And this, I'll note that this particular comment was, could be viewed as nitpicking. Okay, I don't think you can draw the conclusion that was stated in the EIS based on the data that was observed in the field. That was my comment. Right. I'll leave it at that.
But I guess, John, to what you're saying is it doesn't really matter too much given that we've already approved that portion.
That's not for me to say.
Well, yeah.
That's for you to
say. That's your advice.
Right. Look, I mean, kind of where I'm coming, and I'll say it. You know, I think the comment of any development is going to impact the current natural state. Any development of greenfield, you know, undeveloped area. You know, this is affordable housing. Everybody knows what we're doing here. This is 100%. If we weren't doing 100%, I was just trying to do the math. 67 units at 15% is 450 units. To use the analogy, there would be a lot of eggs broken somewhere else to do things. So I think we got to look at it in the context of, you know,
some
common sense rationality that if you wanted to go find space for 450 units to make this many units, I think you're going to run into similar things.
Does the board want to hear from this expert or not?
I'm just, you know, he's addressing the comments here.
Right. So our first intention was we wanted to make sure that we had addressed Habitat by Design's comment with respect to the wildlife, which it sounds like we have a meeting of the minds on that. And just for the record, Mr. Kovacs, we are observing, as we were in our preliminary plan as well, the 300-foot riparian buffer on the property, correct?
That's correct.
And that has not changed?
Correct.
Thank you. And otherwise, there has not been a change to the plans from an environmental impact perspective from preliminary to what's being proposed now, correct?
There is a slight change in the transition area averaging plan, which increased a little bit, but we have an application into the DEP for that plan, and we're in compliance with their requirements.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the professionals? Anyone from the board?
No.
Anyone from the public?
Come right up here. We're using the table mic. I think that's nice.
Very good mic.
We'll just leave it there. Yes. Lori Knighting, GNEIDING, the chair of the Environmental Commission. I have something totally different, but given the age of the building and the use of the land as a farmland, has the applicant conducted an evaluation of possible or probable asbestos lead pesticide contamination, the latter in accordance with NJDEP?
Mr. Kovacs, am I correct that the applicant has conducted a phase one study?
Correct.
Okay. I have not seen it, so I don't know what the results were. If you could enlighten me a little bit, please.
Sure. So I'll start by just saying this. Mr. Kovacs, to the extent that there are any areas of concern in the phase one report, all of those areas of concern will be remediated in accordance with NJDEP standards, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Does that include any potential farm dumps above ground and below ground underground storage tanks?
So
maybe I should go back and say, were there any farm dumps or above ground tanks or underground tanks found to be remediated?
Do them one at a time for you.
Okay.
So, Mr. Kovacs, am I correct that the phase one did identify an underground storage tank?
Yes.
And that that storage tank will be removed and remediated in accordance with DEP standards?
Yes.
Okay. And there is also an area of historic agricultural use on the property, correct?
Correct.
And that is another area of concern that was identified, correct? And that that historic agricultural use area is within the conservation area of the property, correct?
Correct.
And so it's not being disturbed in accordance with the, to accomplish this project, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay. It may not be disturbed, but would there still be a potential for people to go back to their children playing in the dirt and having potential exposure to said pesticides?
Well, anything that's going to be accomplished on the property is going to be done in accordance with the oversight of a licensed site remediation professional in accordance with DEP standards.
Okay. Can I ask you something? If it's in a conservation easement area, are you allowed to remove it? If, let's say, the board said they would prefer that it be removed. If it's in a conservation easement area, can it be removed?
Not in accordance with DEP's standards, no.
Okay. Just for the board members who don't know my credentials, I have a bachelor's in biology. I have a master's in environmental toxicology. I've worked for 34 years in environmental consulting and have conducted hundreds of environmental, human health, and ecological risk assessments, and this is very typical of what I do.
You know what to do? Let's get you sworn now. Just,
okay.
Yeah. Swear that the testimony that you just gave and the additional testimony that you'll probably give will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth to help you, God?
Yes. Okay. This is very typical of work that I do. That
John, do we need to actually qualify her as an expert if she wants to talk as an expert about this?
I tell you what, let's continue with your qualifications. Let's get you qualified.
Okay. Hang on. I actually have this all written down. Okay. I've done, environmental consulting for 34 years. I've managed thousands of phase one environmental assessments. I've hundreds of hazardous waste site investigations. I've conducted environmental health and safety audits. Oh, I'm sorry. I've conducted environmental and health and safety audits. I have conducted a multi-million dollar remediations of hazardous waste. And I have been on the Environmental Commission for over 17 years, its chair since 2011.
Other. Leave the Environmental Commission thing off it, but does the applicant have any questions about her qualifications to be qualified as an environmental expert based on everything other than the fact that she's chair of the Environmental Commission?
We do not.
Okay. Or accept her as an expert, an environmental expert?
I have no objection.
I have no objection.
Okay.
So a concern that the state would have would be that children running in areas or playing in areas that have pesticide contamination could be potentially exposed, or even pregnant women could be potentially exposed, and depending upon what the concentrations were, that they could be have an exposure. Are the concentrations above any of the state criteria, to your knowledge?
We have not done. We're in the process of doing the phase two study.
Can I ask Lori something?
Sure.
If this area is in a conservation area,
right?
In your experience, can they remove it if the board wanted it removed?
If the contamination is greater than what the New Jersey state criteria are, yes, it could be removed. It should be removed. If it's in the conservation easement and disturbing wetlands, then it would have to get the, you know, it would have to be known to the state, and depending upon what the excavation, the remediation is, it would have to require a permit.
So what you're saying is, if
If there is contamination.
If there's contamination.
Greater than the NJDEP soil criteria.
If there is contamination greater than the NJDEP soil criteria.
Correct. Residential soil criteria. Okay, then it should be removed.
Okay,
even if it's in a conservation easement.
And then if it is in a conservation easement, and if the contamination is greater than the residential NJDEP soil criteria,
mm-hmm.
how does one go about, what approvals do you need to remove it?
You would have to notify the state.
When you say notify the state, you mean notify the DEP?
DEP, yes.
And then what?
Then, as the applicant said, that an LSRP, or the licensed state site remediation professional, would be involved. And it would depend upon how deep it was, how contaminated it was, where the contamination was, most likely be excavated. And again, if it was in the wetlands area, then it would probably need to have be permitted by the state, but most it would have to be notified to the state.
Okay. So being in the in a conservation easement area would not prohibit the removal, is your testimony?
Correct.
Okay.
So, in Mr. Joel, the applicant will comply with all applicable NJDEP requirements with regard to any historic agricultural fill.
So, if I wrote a condition that said, if there's contamination greater than the residential NJDEP soil criteria, the contamination shall be reported to the NJDEP and removed in accordance with all regulations, that would be acceptable?
Well, I think I would want to modify it a bit to say that we will remediate or otherwise address it in accordance with NJDEP requirements. I'll be honest, I don't know the full extent of the law. I'm told by Mr. Kovacs, who can certainly testify for himself, that there are other means of addressing it besides removing it.
Can you explain what in your
there are other engineering controls besides the removal?
You mean like capping it?
No, like fencing the area to prevent people from going into that area. But we're in the process of performing the phase two. As a result of the phase one we performed, we made certain recommendations for additional sampling and testing, which we're undergoing right now. And based upon those results, we'll come up with a plan to deal with. A licensed site remediation professional will have the oversight to come up with a plan in accordance with state requirements. But let me just say that this particular project is not unusual for most projects in the area. Any project that has been farmed mm-hmm. in Clinton Township would have similar considerations. And more often than not, we develop these properties. It just has to be done in accordance with...
This is not an approval stopper. This is talking about a condition.
Right.
Correct.
And
yes.
As part of that, if I could get the results of that phase two, would that be amenable?
What is the applicant's position on that?
Yeah, I'd like to see.
I guess I'm not certain as to what end.
He wants to know why do you want the results?
I would just like to, have your results, your summary of it, and to be able to agree with your results. That's all.
I mean, so we're. Yeah, I mean, we're the kind of the end game here for all of this is that we have to have a licensed site remediation professional
mm-hmm.
approve whatever we do and. From the state's perspective, that's the ultimate determination that it's been properly addressed. So I mean, we can certainly provide you with...
Is a phase one or a phase two, are they a private confidential document? Or if that's going to be submitted, aren't they a matter of public mm-hmm. record? Because if they're a matter of public record...
Well, the information under the LSRP certainly would be a public record.
What's submitted... phase ones and phase twos are not typically public records. Once you get into the process of remediation with an LSRP, public records are generated from there.
There's also, there's a NJDEP required phase one and an NJDEP required phase two versus a bank required phase one and phase two.
So what I would say we certainly could provide is the LSRP approval, which I would think would be...
Well, the LSRP has to write a report to the state, and that's what I would like to have a copy of.
Yeah, well, if it's going to the state, that's a public record.
Right.
So you want a copy of the LSRP's report to the state?
Correct.
Okay, so just so there's no confusion about this, the two conditions that I'm sketching out, the first one would say, if there's contamination greater than the residential NJDEP soil criteria, the contamination shall be remediated per NJDEP requirements.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. The second condition would say the LSRP's report to the state shall be supplied to the board and all board experts and the Clinton Township Environmental Commission. Acceptable?
Yes.
Thank you.
Is the board experts and the Environmental Commission, correct?
Right.
Just want to make sure my notes are good, too.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to be comparing notes with you, trust me.
Right. That's why I want to make sure mine are good, so I don't just say, well, I can't read that. So.
The easiest way to do this, of course, is to...
Anything else from the public?
Any other questions for this witness from the public? Nope.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kovacs. And just for the record, Mr. Kovacs does have a family emergency, so he's, if everyone's satisfied, he will be leaving after testifying.
Can you excuse him?
Does anybody see any reason? I think we're good.
You're excused.
Thank you, Mr. Kovacs.
Thank you.
Okay.
Do we need a break? Do you want a hand break or just a change paper break?
Everyone stay where they are.
I am up, right?
You're up. Last one.
Talking about the variances and the dumping. 50 minutes, yeah, but they don't.
Okay. That was under 2 minutes. That was a heck of a pitch time.
All right, setting records.
All right.
Okay, so we are up to our last witness of the evening, which is John McDonough, who is the planner for the project. John, you were previously sworn.
Yes, he was.
Yes, I was.
You also remain under oath.
So acknowledged.
Okay, John, could you start by just giving an overview of your qualifications and experience, please?
Sure. My name is John McDonough. That's spelled McDonough. I am a licensed professional planner here in the state of New Jersey. I am also a member of the American Institute of Certified Planners, which is our national certification. I testify in this capacity on a nightly basis, for better or for worse. I have testified in front of this board before, in fact, on this project about 2 years ago.
Okay. We would ask that Mr. McDonough be accepted again as a professional planner.
I see no issues, Joseph Eastman, anybody in the public? Nope, we'll accept him as an expert.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, so Mr. McDonough, why don't you give us an overview of the relief that we're seeking here?
Sure. So we've conducted what I would consider to be a standard planning analysis here. We've reviewed the existing conditions. We've reviewed the proposed, the comparison with what was previously approved by the board 2 years ago. Looked at the zoning criteria that are in the Beaverbrook redevelopment plan and the relief that the applicant needs. There's several deviations. Most of them are the equivalent of what the board previously granted. I think the one new variance, or I'll call it deviation, that the applicant needs is essentially what you see in the exhibit on the upper left.
On the upper left of exhibit which?
A6 for the record. The eyes don't work that well anymore. A6, which is your detention basin in the front yard. That's relief that was not there before. That's really the essence of the application that's before you now. We'll run through the other deviations, but essentially from a physical planning standpoint, that was more or less what the board had previously granted. Mm-hmm. If we look at the Beaverbrook redevelopment plan, which was adopted December 21st, 2015. On page 26 of the redevelopment plan is a plan that looks very similar to A2, which is on the easel there. So the form of the development has not materially changed from what was in your redevelopment plan back in 2015. Has not changed materially from what was approved by the board back in 2016. From a form standpoint, from a use standpoint, and from all higher tiers of zoning, God bless you, Mr. Chairman, the essence of the application has not changed. Importantly, on the positive side here, and we'll run through the proofs more formally, but this is an application all about affordable housing and the municipality meeting its obligations under the law as mandated by our courts. And again, the appeal of this application is that it's 100% affordable. I think the chair made a good comment before that if the density bonus were imposed with the 20% set aside, we could be looking at 450 units here or the equivalent on another piece of property. Another appeal of this application, another benefit of this application, is the fact that, again, bouncing back to A6, we are preserving a historic building. That goes back to actually the 1700s, if I read the documents correctly. That's also a goal of good planning as well. And then finally, what I would call the third of the big three benefits of this application is the aesthetic benefit, not only from the architectural standpoint, but also from what Tom and what your expert has done as well in terms of vetting through the landscape architectural aspects of this plan. A very beautiful landscape, and I think an overall very desirable visual environment, which is another goal of planning here. So with that framework and those three blanket benefits, we tie that to the land use law. We apply them to all of the relief that the applicant is seeking here. Good planning, good land use planning is all about balance. You have a whole line of professionals here that have vetted environmental, geotech, landscaping, lighting, all of those elements to protect the public interest. I think there's been a good positive exchange here between the board's professionals, and certainly a receptive applicant that has modified the plans. It's exactly what the land use process is supposed to be. That's what the Pizzo-Manton case told us, that it is supposed to be an interactive process between the board and the public. Board office comments and an applicant responds. So with that said, we'll run through the eight deviations that the applicant needs. The first one relates to the building-to-building separation. Brett hit that in the onset with Exhibit A2, and the fact that the building-to-building separation is required to be 30 feet at its closest point, two buildings get to 18.3 feet. This is what I would call an analytical deviation. It's the same separation that was on the 2016 approved plan. It wasn't called out. We didn't have Brett scrubbing the plans at that time, so we didn't have the dimensional aspect of that noted on the plan. So that was relief that was there before. It was just not called out. Clearly justifiable under the flexible sea balancing test, where we look at the benefits of the application as a whole under our polling case, the benefits of affordable housing, the benefits of historic preservation and an aesthetic environment, all of that wrapped together against a deviation, if you will, or a shortage in terms of building to building separation, which has actually reached a favorable recommendation by your own fire department here, which is really the essence of why we have those building-to-building separations. Likewise, the second relief that the applicant needs relates to the building-to-parking separation, which is required to be 15 feet, and the closest point the applicant is at 9.4 feet. Same exact rationale, same physical layout as previously approved by the board. The dimension wasn't noticed as relief in the prior application. And likewise, the fire department has endorsed the plan and found no substantial issue with the layout. The third deviation relates to that dumpster enclosure, which is in the upper right-hand portion of Exhibit A2, in proximity to Beaver Brook Road. We're looking at, Beaver Avenue. We're at 38.5 feet versus 65 feet, which again is in a similar location that was previously approved. Before, we were at 44.4 feet, but that did not account for the 7-foot right-of-way dedication. So again, in terms of the physical separation from the roadway, essentially landing in the exact same spot as before, and also justifiable under that C2 balancing test. The actual requirement is 65 feet, again, 38.5 feet for the record. I'm told this is also being located to save a large tree, so there's an environmental benefit, a landscape benefit there as well. In terms of the mitigation, we do have some nice buffering with substantial plantings. The refuse enclosure is actually going to be located further back than Building 5, which is what you see in the upper right-hand corner. So I think there's a mitigation as well by virtue of the fact that we do have some massing that's actually closer to the road than that refuse enclosure. Topographically, generally submerged from the surrounding lands and going to preserve that embankment or that berm across the frontage of the property, also as basis for that relief. The fourth relief relates to the fact that the basin is in the front yard from two roads. On the Beaver side, we are at 34.2 feet, whereas 65 feet would be the requirement. And on the Austin Hill side, 15.5 feet versus 30 feet. In terms of the justification for that variance, for that deviation, again, I point to A6. If the essence of that regulation is to provide for a soft green edge around the perimeter of the property, it's exactly what you're getting with the aesthetic in Exhibit A6. Visually and functionally, the basin is going to be landscaped to blend with the surroundings. So for all intents and purposes, this is going to be unperceivable relief by the applicant. Deviation number 5 is a continuation of a previously granted deviation, the retaining wall in the side yard. That is in the upper portion of Exhibit A2, 10 feet versus 25 feet. The wall is actually higher than approved, but in the same exact location as before. Deviation number 6 is for parking, also previously granted. Actually, fewer parking spaces were previously granted. 116 was the number before, 118 is the number now, whereas 147 is the requirement. So we're looking at an improvement over that which was previously approved. And also, as a prior finding of the board, the parking supply will meet the actual demand here by virtue of the nexus with the ITE recommendation under its parking generation manual, we actually exceed the 112 that would be generated applying that manual.
And just before you move on from parking, the parking is compliant with the redevelopment plan requirement.
Very good point. Yes. This is a deviation or a de minimis exception from the RSIS standards. Right. We know that the basis under RSIS is to look at local conditions. You have a basis right there in your ordinance in that 112 is the requirement under the redevelopment plan.
Thank you.
Number 7, deviation number 7 is for foundation plantings, and I see this as somewhat of a technical deviation because the applicant has provided plantings all around the foundations of the buildings. They're just not hardwood shrubs. We've gone with a much softer theme here with the fescues and the ornamental grasses. So to the extent that the literal intent of the ordinance is not met here, certainly the spirit of the ordinance is being met.
before you move on to the next one, I just want to backtrack for a second because I think you might have misspoke earlier regarding the setback for the detention basin, just so we're all on the same page. That's 28 feet. I think you had said 34 feet, but the correct figure is 28.
From Beaver?
From Beaver.
28 feet versus 65 from
Beaver. I'm seeing the nod from Brett, and that may have been a refinement on the latest plans, but 28 feet is the actual relief that the applicant is looking for. It doesn't change my opinion. The picture stays the same. Lastly, relief number 8 is the steep slope disturbance, two categories of slope disturbance that physically have not changed from what was previously approved. Again, it was just an engineering miscalculation in terms of the numbers that were given to the board. Where we stand now, in the greater than 25% range, 16.7% is what's proposed, 0% is what's allowed, and in the 15 to 25% range, 45.5% is what's proposed, and 15% is what's allowed. Same justification as previously, no additional slope disturbance than that which was previously granted under the prior plan. And I believe the resolution of the board from back in 2016 actually found a hardship justification here, relief related to the land and not the structures per se.
One more for you before you move on.
I know.
Just regarding the side yard setback with regard to the retaining wall, although the location of the wall has not changed with respect to the setback, the height of that wall has changed. So just wanted to be clear about that. And the side yard setback variance was previously granted by the board in 2016, the only distinction being the height of that wall in that location.
You're talking about number 5. The 10 feet's the same versus 25 as before, but the height is greater, and that's
correct.
Why you're applying for a new variance for that, because the setback's the same, but the height is greater.
Correct.
Exactly.
I just wanted to clarify.
And
yep.
Just for the record, it was a 4.5-foot height before. It's actually 10 feet now.
Thank you. Sorry to backtrack.
So that's a rundown of the relief and the basis for the justifications. Tying it to the statute, on the positive side, we can certainly find that there is an advancement under the municipal land use law of Purpose A, the promotion of the general welfare, with a 100% affordable housing project, which has been deemed to be inherently beneficial under the law. Additionally, the advancement of Purpose I, which is the planning goal to promote a desirable visual environment, and Purpose J, the planning goal to promote historic preservation. To a lesser extent, I think the board can find also the advancement of Purpose D, which is the provision for appropriate population densities. The density here of 66 units.
Go with A, I, and J.
Stop. Okay. I'll stop right there. I'll quit while I'm ahead.
Right.
And then on the negative side, certainly no substantial detriment to the surrounding properties. The land uses on 3 sides are non-residential, and on the 4th side, beyond the wetlands, we transition to the single-family detached homes. So this site is located in a nice transition location between non-residential and lower-density residential. Multifamily residential becomes a nice transition in between. Last aspect of the test looks at the impact on your zone plan and ordinance. I think we can certainly conclude that this is going to advance your housing plan and your state mandate to provide for affordable housing. We know, whether it's good or bad, the affordable housing obligation is 100% on the municipality. In this particular circumstance, you get 66 units essentially for free. I see that as a public benefit. The cost to the town here is zero in that regard. Importantly, this particular site goes back in your housing plan to 1999. It was included in a prior round. So it's been in what I would say the pipeline for a very, very long time. And what's also attractive here is you do get the 2-for-1 credit. So this actually counts for 132 affordable housing credits, even though you're only building 66 units here.
But this project is actually identified in the latest housing element and fair share plan adopted by this board, correct?
Yes, it is. The master plan also advanced the goals of environmental preservation, neighborhood preservation, historic preservation, and a variety of housing types. And then, of course, certainly advancing the goals of the redevelopment plan. Same thing, promote historic compatibility with the Annandale Historic District, an integrated and unified design.
You're getting on a roll here.
It's the big finish. And then lastly, to advance smart growth principles, compact design, walkable, attractive, quality development. With all of that, I think the C2 test is certainly met here. The benefits substantially outweigh the detriments.
Yeah. I just want to add one thing. He mentioned this Pullen case, right? So the Pullen case stands for the proposition that when the board is considering a C2 variance, unlike other relief, for example, exceptions, which are related to exactly what is how the deviation will relate to something on the ground. The Pullen case said for a C2 variance, the benefit doesn't have to arise just from granting the particular C2 variance from a particular regulation, that the board should look at the entire project and can consider benefits coming from the entire project in determining whether to grant individual C2 variances that would help achieve that project.
All right, I have a question. And Tom, maybe actually you can answer this. It might just be a mistake in your letter, but in the introduction to your memo, you say variance relief and several design exceptions are requested. Are there any design exceptions being requested?
No. In fact, I would qualify all of these as deviations from a redevelopment plan. The essence of the test is the variance test. Perhaps maybe the foundation plantings would be considered a design exception, but I think everything else would fall within the test of a variance.
That parking thing, though, would...
That's a de minimis exception. It's sort of out of...
So I would say the parking thing is an exception. It's an RSIS exception. Foundation plantings, probably an exception, and the rest of them, I would agree, we can call variance.
Okay. I agree, too.
Good question.
Okay, so... any questions for Mr. McDonough?
Mr. McDonough.
I'll just say I certainly have no objections to Mr. McDonough's testimony. I think, and it's been mentioned before, you know, remembering how we got here, that this has been a public process, I think, beginning around 2015, which began with an area in need of redevelopment investigation, a subsequent redevelopment plan, then a preliminary site plan approval was granted, and you know, really the task before the board now is to evaluate some minor deviations from the site plan, which was conceived through the redevelopment process. Again, the major change being the location of the drainage basin. So again, you know, this is sort of a balance test to understand the benefits of the affordable housing for the community versus any, you know, possible impacts, you know, to the land and surrounding community and, you know, for the board to think about how the applicants mitigated any of these impacts to the extent that they can.
Good. Any questions from the board for this witness? Anybody from the public for this witness?
Nope.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Ben.
Thank you very much.
Not all applicants make closings. You could want to, you can, no need. You could just say that your case is done. You rest your case, and let's see if any members of the public
want to say something, right?
Anything that they want to testify, put any evidence in, or anything like that.
My sense is most folks are probably sick of hearing me talk and are probably eager to get home and see if they have power on at their house. So I'll just thank everybody for all of their attention and their comments. We really do appreciate it. I think everyone's focus is clear on what we're asking for at this point. So thank you all.
Anybody from the public have any questions or comments?
So far, Lori Knighting was sworn in. She testified and asked questions. But anyone in the public now has the opportunity to voice their opinion, make statements to the board, anything they want to do. No? Okay.
All right. So.
Close for deliberations?
I think we're closed for deliberations. Well, you heard kind of the wrap-up from both the applicant's planner and Tom, our planner, on the requests and justifications for the
C2. Again, this is an application for amended preliminary site plan. The board previously granted an initial preliminary site plan. So amended preliminary site plan, the initial final site plan, and then there are 8 pieces of relief, approximately two of one's an exception from RSIS, one's an exception from your ordinance. The other 6 can be considered variances. I believe that one of them, the steep slope, was considered a C1 before, probably considered a C1 again, and the others were considered C2s or brand new C2s.
Correct.
And unless you want
and,
me,
and everything is
well aware.
Everything is subject, and everything subject to all the conditions of all the
correct
testimony and agreeing with the and disagreeing with, as we all heard, with the bits and pieces of each of the reports. Correct.
Correct.
So subject to all that.
Yeah.
Is there any discussion? Any?
I think the relief requested is appropriate. I think the only thing we didn't really talk much about was, given that you're saying that the foundation plantings, which I know we already approved, are a exception, and we didn't talk about, but I think it is impractical to be able to maintain the historic character with still putting in the foundation plantings. So I think we meet the criteria there really nicely, and everything else. I'm very happy that you specifically outlined, you know, exactly which MLUL purposes for the C2 variants, so that makes it easy. I think it all makes sense.
I do have a couple of comments. I do believe this was a very well-designed project. The project complies to the most part with the 2015 approved redevelopment plan. I believe the applicant professionals, all of them made a great presentation tonight and the last hearing. And they addressed the concern of the board members and the professionals. I do want to thank specifically our board members. I think they have, with their professional opinions,
you mean expert, board experts.
I mean, board
experts. I thought you meant
board. No, board experts. I do believe they spent a lot of time and they provided suggestions that made this project much better project. And I do appreciate all your time and your experience. Thank you.
I'll say the same thing. I think the applicant did a good job, comprehensive design and presentation throughout. The photograph on the end there, and Mr. Donahue?
Mr. McDonough.
McDonough. It was a nice touch to put that up there last and such.
Yeah.
I think the benefits outweigh the few exceptions and such. I am a little still unsettled with the 5 feet from the existing building, but I'll take the testimony that the necessary precautions were made when that's undertaken and such. So, but
okay.
Yeah, I think everybody did a lot of work on this project, both on both sides, and comes across in the presentation and in the pictures. And I'm very confident that everybody will be very cognizant of the type of site this is and will take every precaution, like you said, Rich, and everybody else mentioned about being safe and making sure that everything is handled properly. So nice job, guys.
Thank you.
Okay. So
my only suggestion is generally I rarely say what I'm about to say. Generally, I say, you know, the board, let's hear some specific reasons for the C2. I would say in this particular application, if you wanted, you could incorporate by reference what Mr. McDonough is testing.
Yeah, I think that made it really easy for us. That was absolutely fantastic.
And that will give us guidance on what to put in the resolution.
Yeah. So, is there someone to make a...
I'll move it. So moved.
I'll second.
Thank you. Roll call.
Yes. Sorry, just bear with me one second. Ms. Kleinhans?
Yes.
Mr. Mardini?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Mr. Scheich?
Yes.
And Mr. Semay?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Okay.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Please.
Do you want to go get the mayor
yeah,
back in?
Yeah, why don't we? And we'll do our quick reports and then.
Have you been appropriately refrigerated now?
My hands are cold. All right.
And you have no concern about the infiltration trench here.
You want to, while they're going, you guys want to, you don't have to thank them. You wanted to do a quick little reports, updates? They don't need it.
Have them take it off the board and fold it. Okay, so when you fold it up, the exhibit tag is in the lower right-hand corner of the neighborhood, as you can see.
We actually did some
planning stuff.
Really?
Yes.
Somewhat surprised.
One, two, three.
Like this. Look. Once like this,
thank you.
Twice like this, three, four. Okay, and then if you really left was open, an exhibit tag over there.
Just making sure that just down gradient of that, there's something
there.
Yeah, a little bit.
If you walk down there, shopping center, see that whole circle.
Yeah. The problem with the underscore is there's not a lot of money.
All right, guys, we got to finish this meeting. You guys take it all in the hall.
Crack that whip.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good
I do appreciate it.
Keep taking your time. All right. So, what else? Any updates? Updates on council, real quick.
I'll give you a quick update from council. The We approved an agreement with the Ben Brooks, Robert and Kevin both, to acquire sufficient capacity for the comp project. Somewhere between 5,000 and 11,000 gallons per day at a price of $75 a gallon. That was done in open session. And subsequent to the Wednesday council meeting, the following day on Thursday, CTSA agreed to give us 14,000 gallons of capacity for that project. The project requires 20,025 gallons, so we require now all of the remaining free capacity from CTSA. We have about 900 left over from the various projects that we acquired capacity for up until LeComp appeared. So we should be purchasing somewhere around 5,000, maybe 5,500 gallons from the Ben Brooks. The rest of the capacity, and that was retained by one Chuck Urban doing business as CCDA, is available for a purchase price of around $100 a gallon. So it was a good thing for the township, saved us a bunch of money, And I believe that capacity, if the little comp deal falls through for some unknown reason, it's sort of portable. We own it, we possess it.
Right. Anywhere within the Clinton Township sewer service area.
Correct. We also had a good discussion in executive session and took action coming out of it to approve a MOU with the folks, CIS, the developer, the potential developer, putative developer of the LACOM project. So I think that's now pretty well locked up in our plan from a utility perspective as well as from a, not contractual, but, you know, from a early legal perspective.
John, so, could I just say, you used an acronym.
Putative or?
No.
CIS?
No, before CIS.
MOU.
MOU?
Something. Memorandum
of Understanding.
Okay, MOU. Thank you. I couldn't hear that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So, I, you know, good project, good progress on the overall plan at council, and obviously I'm very pleased with the vote this evening on this one. So, I think the good Mr. Drill should be now well equipped for his appearance on the 19th of March.
Good.
Yep.
Good.
Oh, and we recognized, this is sort of environmental, the good folks from the Hunter and Healthcare Foundation bought us a bunch of exercise stations for the roofing project, Maruki and Caltel Parsons. And we had a nice get-together with M. Bob Wise and Dave Parkins's government relations guy.
So, do you want to go into closed session to update them on what the council was updated on with the affordable housing or not?
We don't have enough members.
It wasn't.
Yeah. If anyone's interested, if less than a quorum, if less than four of you, after the meeting's over, want a quick little update, I can give you a quick little update. Yeah.
Might also mention the Verizon stuff.
Not until it's a, I wouldn't mention it, not okay. Until it's a done deal.
All right. Fair enough.
That Marukian, it's still called Marukian, right? Or is it?
It has a little... I know where you're going. It has a little Marukian farm sign on it. I don't think we're prepared to talk about park name just yet.
Who can pay his names? That's where I come from.
Yeah.
So.
It's all about naming rights.
And I'll put it out there.
So, you know, we asked various entities, and we intentionally preserved or didn't preserve 6 acres because we wanted to help other entities, and they basically thumbed their nose at us. And that's fine. No harm, no foul. But when names come up, I'm taking this opportunity to say they really don't have a say in names. We'll talk about that publicly. If and when that would come up, because now all of a sudden I pick up senses that names are important.
Oh, just to really one so, person.
Well, yes.
I kind of like Kramer's Creek, Kramer's Brook.
I think
you
that's
know,
all
just
fine.
A nice geographic thing.
Right. That's but all. Sorry for the
don't
moment.
Tell I'm trying to keep peace.
How's the, are there still a lot of folks without power?
About 800 folks without power, myself included.
Yep.
I don't think we're going to get us back online. My end of that development.
Kevin, you want to just run a really long extension cord to all of us?
Yeah.
I just don't want to run out of propane.
Yeah.
John Tiger and OEM has done a very nice job with this, keeping everybody updated. The only two roads that are blocked at this point, which is a significant improvement from this morning, or from last night, rather, are, Cokesbury High Bridge. There's a very large conifer down on the line that brings power to my house, about a quarter mile west of the river. And then at number 73 Old Mountain Road, there's a very large tree across that road. I'll leave it at that.
All right.
Hopefully the crews will be out tomorrow. At least get the darn trees off so that we can have some hope to get electricity back at a reasonable time.
All right. Thank you. Sorry for my little public service. What else? The ordinance subcommittee?
Ah,
We met tonight.
Even a blind squirrel finds a nut.
You're on a roll tonight.
Yes,
wow.
Well, yes, power.
Okay, we met tonight for an hour. We went over four or five items. One of them, the solar farm issue that we discussed last time, and the space and the space requirements, and we're going to make recommendation to eliminate that condition.
Keep him in the loop.
Okay.
Yep. All right. Well, for this one, I mean, we're going to strike it outright.
Yep. So we're going to take it out.
You're in the loop.
We talked about the updating our checklist. I know Denise wanted that updated. It hasn't been updated since 2005, so we're going to work on that, and hopefully in a month we'll come up with a revised checklist that we'll provide to the board for adoption. We reviewed the Board of Adjustment 2017 annual report. They weren't busy last year. They had 13 applications. The board did not feel anything that required anything to be addressed, so we're leaving that alone. And we discussed briefly soil movement and our ordinance, and if there is any reason for us to make any changes. And I don't believe we're going to recommend any changes at this time. So we're going to keep at it and meet again next month, and we'll let you know.
Thank you. Just as an aside, we did talk about it as we move forward with the settlement with Fair Share Housing Center. That requires for Marukian either a map adjustment or a inclusion in the center. And, of course, across the street, it appears that the Lacombe parcel requires inclusion in the center.
Right.
Since it's not contiguous, it doesn't abut any currently developed land. So we really need to start working on that sort of stuff. Plus, I would think if we're going to go for a a center designation, we probably want to start moving forward on the other stuff, you know, getting us more in compliance with the RMP. Right now we're on training wheels, and it's time to start taking the other steps forward if we want that council, the full council, to say yes to our economic center ideas. And just a quick mention, at one point they had suggested, the Highlands folks asked the question, would we want to have an industrial center for Exxon? They seem very easy about that. And I don't know if designating Exxon as an industrial center would help our arguments to bring the centers for Lecompte and Marukian, you know, down past Exxon. So just something to think about. I'm not all that knowledgeable of these things.
Me either.
So, but the good folks at Burgess are. That's one of the reasons they got hired way back.
Anything else? Anything? I did not make it to the environmental on Thursday. Anything else? Open space? I don't know anything.
Open space did not meet, and Rich is off for a couple of weeks out in Death Valley and places like that.
All right. Well, anything else?
That's it.
That's it.
We met our goal.
I'll move to adjourn. Second.
Local.
Wait, I'm sorry, who?
Sue and then me.
No. How about all in favor?
Yeah.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Those are abstain? All right. Thank you all.